I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for choosing this KAXE KBXE conversation. We are member-supported radio, a National Public Radio affiliate in northern Minnesota. We need your support for our radio broadcasts, our online content, and our podcast. Go to KAXE.org, and thanks for listening.
Minnesota author Carrie Griffith is going to be speaking at the Brainerd Public Library this noon for their Brown Bag Lunch series. He'll be talking about his new book, Gunflint Burning, Fire in the Boundary Waters. It's the story of the Ham Lake Fire of 2007. Carrie, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to your listeners.
Yeah, and the Ham Lake Fire is probably still in the memory of a lot of us, how bad it was. And I think first we want to know, how it started. And I might note the way it started was an experienced person who had visited the Boundary Waters many times. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there was a gentleman by the name of Steve Posniak who had been, this was actually the 27th time he had gone into the Boundary Waters. He almost did the same thing every year. He'd go into the Boundary Waters the weekend before the opening weekend of fishing season, so it was in early May, when he thought he would have the woods entirely to himself. And this year was no different. He went in, and he kind of had a tradition. He was only going in for two nights, which was typically, he'd only go in for two or three nights. And on the last day, the Saturday, May 5th, he was going to come out. He had a tradition. He was kind of a news hound, so he'd taken newspaper and stuff. And he had a tradition. He would burn all his paper trash before he left. And, I'm sure most of your listeners know that the optimal phrase is leave no trace. You're supposed to pack out everything that you pack in. You're not supposed to burn your trash, but, of course, Steve didn't think it was a drastic violation. He started it, walked away from the fire, thought it was out, and that's what started the Ham Lake Fire.
Now, when this fire started, there were extreme conditions of dryness and wind. So was he not prepared for that, or did he just assume it wouldn't be a problem?
Well, yeah, I think he thought he could watch it. You know, it was one of those fire grates that it's right on Ham Lake, and it's kind of a protected. It's slightly protected by the woods and trees that are around it and that kind of thing. So even though it was becoming unseasonably warm that day, and it was dry, I think he just thought he could burn his paper trash mm-hmm. and it wouldn't be a problem. He'd just keep an eye on it. And I think that's what he did, but it just, the wind was so strong, it must have breathed life into an ember and lifted it up and dropped it in a copse of trees on the campsite. And again, that's how it started. He was warned, Andy Ahrens, who was the co-owner of Tuscarora Lodge and Outfitters, who outfitted him, actually wrote on the bottom of his entry permit, be careful with fires. Mm. So, it was just a tradition. He should have been obviously more careful. He wasn't, and the results were tragic.
Can you describe how the fire began to develop and what the response was by the DNR and others?
Well, it was really remarkable. The Ham Lake Fire was not the largest forest fire in Minnesota history by acreage burned. That's typically how they measure it. It was actually the 12th largest fire in Minnesota history, but it was the largest in almost a century, and that's because you alluded to the Forest Service, the DNR, volunteer firefighters. They've gotten so good at fighting forest fires that they've been able to control and repress a lot of the forest fires in northern Minnesota. And this was a good example of that. Within minutes of the fire actually being seen and reported, planes. Actually, Brainerd played the key role at any time during fire season, which typically starts around May 1st, there's an on-call air base, either in Brainerd, Bemidji, or Ely. In this particular instance, the on-call air base was in Brainerd. And some air attack planes got up there and started dropping water and fire retardant on the fire probably within an hour after it was reported. So it turned out to be a huge effort. At one point, there were more than 1,000 firefighters on the fire. It burned for 13 days. Go ahead.
Oh, just Carrie, 8 years earlier, we'd had this tremendous, I think it was a 4th of July blowdown of 250,000 acres up in the Boundary Waters. Is this Ham Lake anywhere near that blowdown?
Yeah, some of that really, from Ham Lake, it burned due west.
Due west, okay.
Because the winds were coming out of the east-southeast that day and gusting at 20, 30 miles per hour. So that first day, first 24 hours, it traveled about 2 miles due west in sort of the shape of a cigar. It was blowing so fast. And that area, parts of that area that it burned into did have remnants of the blowdown in it. And it did. One of the reasons, and then after that, it sort of created a big spiral. It burned 76,000 acres. So it burned a big chunk of wilderness, actually destroyed 144 structures. And a lot of that subsequent days of the burned through territory that was directly in the blowdown. So that was one of the reasons it burned so intensely, because of that blowdown that had happened seven years earlier.
One of the things that I really appreciated about the book was your description of the characters and the people that fought the fire, but of also the residents, and that people were opening up cabins, and that a number of cabins had irrigation systems. Can you describe that? Or fire retardant?
Yeah, that was one of these sprinkler systems. They're set up to pull water from a nearby waterway, usually a lake. A lot of these cabins are on lakes. And they probably have 25, 30 sprinkler heads and a pump, and they pull water from the lake and spray it over the property and the surrounding trees and stuff. It was amazing. Those sprinkler systems had started to be installed after the blowdown, because people knew that if a fire happened, it could be significant. But they'd never been tested. It wasn't sure they'd work. And, unfortunately, it was early in the fire season. So I think they only got about 160 of the sprinkler systems that were set up on residences and cabins and at resorts and stuff going. Because it was so early in the year, and they have to set them up and get the pumps going and stuff. So they got about 160 of them. And of those 160 sprinkler systems that protected those properties, only one failed. So it was very significant for those cabins that they were able to get the sprinkler systems up and running. It was significant.
So you would have a green oasis amongst the burned landscape. Tell us about, there was no loss of life in the forest fire, but there were buildings that were destroyed, as you mentioned. But tell us about Stephen Pozniak.
Yeah, I guess I a lot of people say, well, there are no fatalities from the Ham Lake fire. Well, I'd say there was one, and it was the gentleman who started the fire, Steve Pozniak. It didn't happen until about 18 months later, when a grand jury investigating the fire handed down a 3-count indictment against Steve for starting the fire. And I think it must have weighed heavily on Steve's mind, because I didn't know this before researching the book, but the book, in researching, I discovered that if you are found liable for starting a forest fire in Minnesota, you're liable for damages. And the Ham Lake fire, the damages were an estimated $100 million in property damages, and the firefighting costs alone were $12 million. So Steve was looking at some serious liability, and they handed down the three-count indictment. There were about a year later, through the late fall, early winter of 2008, there were a flurry of motions. The last one, his attorney, Mark Larson, tried to get all three counts of the grand jury indictment dismissed. The judge ruled not in his favor, and the next day, Steve died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So I kind of think he was the only casualty of the Ham Lake fire. It was amazing that no one else perished in the Ham Lake fire.
That's right. Now, one of the things I learned in reading your book is there's a difference in how the DNR and firefighters approach fires in Minnesota in terms of how it starts. Can you describe that?
Yeah, if it's a man-made fire, typically the Forest Service will try to put it out. If it's a naturally occurring fire, this has changed over the years, evolved. The thinking is they'll let it go because they recognize there is ecological value to a forest fire. The other thing is that if it starts on federal land, the U.S. Forest Service takes the lead. If it starts on state land, the Minnesota DNR firefighters take the lead. That's not to say that has also evolved. It long ago, it used to be, if it happened on state land, the state would take deal with a fire, and no one else would get involved. And same with the feds. But now they're much better about sharing resources. There were tons of resources on this fire, relatively well coordinated between the Forest Service, the DNR, the volunteer firefighters, and many others. So it was a real collective effort.
That's Kerry J. Griffith talking with us about his new book, Gunflint Burning, Fire in the Boundary Waters. And you can meet Kerry today at noon at the Brainerd Public Library. It's free and open to everyone. He'll be talking about Gunflint Burning. Kerry, thanks a lot for being on our program this morning.
Well, thank you. And it's a gorgeous day in the Northland. I hope to see people over lunch.
Where are you now?
I'm in Baxter.
You're in Baxter.
Right
okay.
Now.
And where's your home?
Yeah. Rosemount.
Oh, okay.
The
down in metro area. Okay. Well, yeah, you're right. We have a beautiful day, and I hope you have a good turnout at noon today. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Kerry J. Griffith, Gunflint Burning, Fire in the Boundary Waters. You want more information about the book? If you can't make it to his presentation, you can give us a call, 800-662-5799.